This week on the Commander Clash podcast, we're talking about green card draw. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Commander Clash podcast, where the Commander Clash crew talks all things Commander. And this week, we're talking about the best card draw in the best color of Commander. It is green card draw day. And joining me to do this, of course, is Green Master Phil and also Green Hater Crim. So we're going to have a variety of perspectives on this one. What's up, guys?
Heyo. Love green and love drawing cards. So right at home.
I love drawing cards. I don't love green. So, you know, hey.
Oh, the perfect crew for this podcast. So the plan today is pretty simple. We got a ton of green card draw spells that go into different decks, some different categories. And we're going to talk about what green card draws you should be playing, what decks you should be playing, and what green card draw maybe we don't play as much. But before we get into that, we got some sponsors today. Our show is brought to you by Foil Armor. Do you have problems with your foils curling? Well, Foil Armor is the ultimate solution for flattening your foils. It's a two-way humidity pack that you simply put inside an airtight container with your cards, and Foil Armor will absorb and release moisture, making your cards completely flat. Put it back in your storage box to keep your cards flat forever and head over to foilarmor.com and use the code MTGGoldfish to get 15% off. Our show is also brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of $1 or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use their sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/MTGGoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And now it's time for the comment of the week. So we recently talked about some cards that might be a little bit cheaper than you think. And our top comment comes from Call Me Wafu 666, says, I live in a constant state of wanting my collection to retain value while simultaneously wanting my collection to be worthless because they've reprinted everything into the ground. And that is the Magic Player paradox.
That really is the dilemma, right? Yes.
You want the cards to be expensive when you're opening them, but then cheap when you're playing with them and buying them. So yes, that is the unsolvable problem of Magic. But
anyway. What a cycle. What a vicious cycle. Although
they kind of solved it, right? If the expensive versions are expensive and then there's always like a random generic one.
They solved it.
It's kind of the cleanest way to do it.
They solved it with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, right? You just do like really cringy turtles are on some cards that are expensive, and they become super cheap.
Sure. Although, how come that's not true with Aang Shelter? You know that card is still like $50, and it's hyper pixelated. T Pro that good?
Oh man,
good?
The pixelated. Oh, yeah. To be honest, the Avatar ones were kind of even more.
They're worse because you can't see the art. Yeah. And somehow it's like, I will say
the Cruel Tutor with the face on it is $10. The other one's $45. So there is a discount with the face Cruel Tutor, at least.
The face card is hilarious, though. I love that one. That one's such a meme. It's so hated that it's good.
It's kind of like that Faithless Looting that everyone hated, but I kind of love because everyone hates. But anyway, let's talk some green card draw. So the way we're going to do this is we kind of grouped it together by how the card draw works, which also means it's kind of by what decks you would play it in. But let's start with what I think is probably the most generic and definitely the most played green card draw, which are cards that burst draw equal to a creature's power. So there's a whole bunch of cards here. We're talking about cards like Return to the Wild Speaker, Rishkar's Expertise, Season of Gathering, The Legend of Kyoshi, Lifestream's Blessing. Those are all essentially the same with some amount of twists. Like Return to the Wild Speaker can be an overrun, and you can also draw cards equal to the power of target non-human creature you control. Rishkar's Expertise, 6 mana sorcery, you draw cards equal to the greatest power of a creature you control and can play something mana value 5 or less for free. Season of Gathering, same card draw mode, some additional weird poly upsides. Legend of Kyoshi draws cards the same way, but then flips into a creature because it's a saga. Lifestream's Blessing. You can plot it, but then eventually do the same thing with it. I think these are the green card draw spells that I play the most. I guess we could also toss Last March of the Ents and Garruk Primal Hunter in here, because Last March of the Ents is kind of the same thing, but for toughness, and then you put a whole bunch of creatures into play for free. Garruk Primal Hunter does it on a Planeswalker. And then the newest version is Spry and Mighty, which I'm not sure if this fits into that group or not, but Spry and Mighty, You got to have two creatures, and it cares about the, yep, difference between their power. And you draw equal to the difference between their power. But then you also pump your creatures, too, which is a little upside compared to the other one. So anyway, what do you guys think about these cards? For me, these are like my go-to green card draw effects. Like, if I just play a generic green deck, I'm almost certainly going to have some and often like several of these cards in that deck. But what do you guys think about this group?
Yeah, this kind of gets me excited to play green commander sometimes. Sometimes I see a commander and I think that, ooh, there's six power, so at least I have two or three really good draw spells. I guess at this point we're cutting them. I guess later we can decide which one is the best in a vacuum for like six or something.
I'm actually curious which ones you guys do play, because before, until like maybe a year or two ago, there were just not that many of these, so I would just play them all typically, right? I would play Return to the Wildspeaker, Rishkar's Expertise, and then usually Garruk's Primal Hunter. But then in just the last like two-ish years, we got the Season of Gathering, we got Legend of Kyoshi. I think Lifestream's Blessing was relatively recent. I don't remember what Commander Precon that came out of, but I think that was recent
it
as well.
Was Final Fantasy.
Was it Final Fantasy? So that's within the last year as well. How many of these do you actually put in a deck? Like, you're playing a generic green deck. How many of these can you afford to play? Can you play all six? Or
usually
if you keep going eight? Two?
Like, even in my Mads and Wanderer deck, I play like two. And the two I don't know if I still play Rishka's Expertise, but I think the three best ones are Lifestream's Blessing, Rishka's Expertise, and Season of Gathering. The Legend of Kyoshi is probably good, but it's too expensive for me right now, so I haven't tried it yet.
what about Return, Phil? Is Return to the Wildspeaker not number one? I have Return to the Wildspeaker like arguably number one out of this group, personally. Just because it's instant, and you can do the pumping.
Exactly.
Lifestream's Blessing is the pumping.
Lifestream's Blessing, I guess I've never actually pumped with that card, but I could. Someday I will pump with that card. It might happen. Lifestream Blessing is pretty good.
Yeah. To be fair, in Mads and Wanderer, if you cascade into it, it's automatically exiled, so you get the life mode just for free. But then again, if you cascade into it, the Wanderer isn't on the battlefield yet, so beware.
You gotta have another creature out, What about you, Krim? What is your ranking of these cards? Like, pretend you're a green player for a minute. Which ones of these would you play?
I mean, like you had mentioned, Return of the Wildspeaker is the best one. I choose that at the top. I love that. It's because it's also an anthem, right? It's also an anthem at instance, or not an anthem. But you get to do that plus draw, right?
It's draw.
or draw. And you get to choose like when you want to use that. And I love that. I love the versatility in that. It only costs five. And it's also instant speed, so it plays to the way I like playing. I think it's easily that, and then you go into, like, if you want to talk about, like, raw, just card advantage, Rishkar's Expertise is pretty nice, because then you get to draw and then put something into play for free, so you don't feel as bad when you tap out and spend the six, right? So, I like those two at the top. Last March of the Ents, awesome card, if you have something. There's a lot of these things that are, like, big ifs, right? Yeah. And whereas, like, Return of the Wildspeaker, yes, it's an if, but, you know, I accept it because the trade-off is that, again, it's an overrun. Legend of Kyoshi also kind of picking up steam. I haven't actually gotten to play enough Legend of Kyoshi to really get a good read on it. But I like Legend of Kyoshi. Like, it reads nice, right? Because it just gets to keep accruing value. Yeah. It's like a planeswalker that can't get hit. And then eventually, you know, it makes the Earthbent land, and then it flips, you know. So I kind of like Legend of Kyoshi as well, but I lean between Rishkar's Expertise.
Clash yet, right? Because if you have Scholar of the Ages or whatever, the thing that removes counters.
Lost Horizons,
and every turn you get this? Whew, that seems pretty busted.
I've definitely played it on Clash, because as soon as they printed it in Avatar, I just started playing it in all my green decks. And I don't think I've ever pulled off that synergy with it, though, but I think I've drawn cards
That's
with it.
That's rare.
My impression of Legend of Kyoshi is it's kind of fine. Like, the upsides are real, right? So for six mana, you do the big card draw equal to power. Then you Earthbend X for X is the number of cards in your hand. So you probably make like a 7-7 or something, maybe bigger if you got Reliquary Tower. But then the creature on the backside, it's okay. Like, if it actually sticks around, it can make a bunch of mana, which is good. I put a lot of value in instant speed on these effects. So I think for me, Return of the Wildspeaker is number one. Lifestream's Blessing, I think, is actually number two, just because it's an instant. And then beyond that, I think it's kind of interchangeable depending on, like, the deck. Between Season of Gathering, Rishkar's Expertise, and Legend of Kyoshi. Like, if you have Enchantment Synergies and Legend of Kyoshi, I actually like Season of Gathering. So Season of Gathering is favorite, the paw actually. One. So it costs 3 paws to do the card draw, but then you can spend 2 paws to blow up all artifacts or enchantments. So it ends up being actually very powerful in a green deck because you don't usually play Mana Rocks, right? So you can blow up all the artifacts and refill your hand or blow up all the enchantments if you run into a Sithis player or whatever. So I think that one's probably number 3 for me. But for me, it's the 2 instant speeds, then Season of Gathering, and then the other ones are all kind of interchangeable.
For me, Season of Gathering is probably the one. If I only play one, it's this, because I also check some other boxes. This one pumps and draws.
Yes.
And it also wrecks the Mishra player. Don't play it against me, though, please. Sometimes it's just a huge blowout.
But instant speed.
This one also
Phil,
pumps your 2-drop or something up to 4 power. Then you say, I think in a vacuum. I guess none of these work in a vacuum because you need a creature, but with a creature on the board, a vanilla something, I think Season of Gathering is the thing. Then again, I don't value instant speed too much on them. I probably should because hand size is a thing, but
and it's
whatever.
Better to surprise it than to, you know, just like,
oh yeah,
sorcery
oh, yeah.
speeds is going to be like leading you to like some blowouts potentially.
Yep. Although
yep,
does Season of Gathering isn't really, it's not a target. It's not like this old one that is like very the targeted one. I don't know. There's a targeted one that's very bad.
I mean, Garrick's Return of the Wild Speaker is actually targeted, right? No, it's actually
it
not targeted.
It's
non-human.
Whatever.
It's got to be non-human. Yeah. Let me ask you guys, is there any reason to ever play Spry and Mighty before we move on to the next group of cards here? Like, is that
toughness
card actually
matters?
Toughness matters.
Two like, creatures you control. Draw X cards and the chosen creatures get plus X and gain trample until end of turn, where X is the difference between those creatures' powers. I don't know what it does. I drafted it once.
What you really want is like a zero power creature, like some random wall with zero power, and then a big creature, and then it'll work just like your Return to the Wild Speaker, but pump those creatures equal to the amount of cards that you draw and give them trample. I feel like the fact that you need 2 creatures makes me less want to play this as like a generic card draw effect. But I think there could be decks like you said, where if you're like have a bunch of low power creatures, you're doing like arcane shenanigans or something, like some sort of deck like that, then this card might actually be good.
It'd be funny, but like you could probably get a better draw spell elsewhere instead of playing Spry and Mighty. But Spry and Mighty rewards you for playing silly. And do like.
This one should be an instant, though. Like,
it's already bad enough.
It would be very fine.
You should make this an instant.
I remember not being too impressed with it in Limited, even. And that's.
Yeah. You would be right. You would be 100% right.
Yeah, I think in general I would just play one of the other ones over this. Like I would need a very specific deck to like replace my Return of the Wild Speaker with a Spry and Mighty.
Yeah.
I think.
Master of the Ends, just the last point here. You know when you need to play it. If you play Necrobloom, you rather draw based on toughness because that's 7 instead of 2. And then putting like the Galta trigger of putting all creatures on the board.
That was actually
just
insane.
Have a Terror of the Peaks or something, and then it's GG.
Oh, it's kind of like a game ending when it works. In the decks where Last March of Ents is good,
it
might be the most powerful. Yeah. Like, being uncounterable is very, very good. It doesn't target anything. And then you get to dump your hand into play after you draw a bunch of cards, which is kind of wild. So our next group is similar. So our next group, only 2 cards in here. We have Disciple of Frailes and Greater Good. So these are sort of similar to the last effect, except they require you to sack a creature. So Disciple of Frailes, 6 mana, MDFC, the backside makes green mana when it enters. You can sack another creature, you draw X, gain X, where X is a creature's power. I guess it's kind of unfair to consider Greater Good to be the same thing, but Greater Good, you can sack a creature, draw equal to its power, then you have to discard 3 cards, but it's an enchantment, so it's repeatable. What kind of deck do you play these cards in? I guess Disciple of Frailes you can play in any deck, right? Is it MDFC? Yep. This is one of my most played MDFCs. What about Greater Good? Like, does you need to be some sort of graveyard deck or something, a sack deck, or can you just play this for value too?
I mean, Disciple of Fraelise is free, right? In any,
yeah,
any,
oh yeah. Fraelise,
right?
Is
like
not
that's just one of your
free,
lands. That card is,
oh my god,
phenomenal. Yeah. But Greater Good. Okay, you're up to no good, right? Like you're up to no good if you're playing Greater Good. Yeah. That card is wild, and yeah, more often than not, I find the discard three is great. Some people just want to get three into the graveyard, right?
Give me an upside.
And then if not, like a lot of the things in green, you're already playing so many giant creatures that it offsets the discard of three, right? Like if I sack something eight power, I draw five, essentially. And it's an enchantment, and it's repeatable. You have a free, like, sack outlet. I think this card is very much so solid in sack decks, but you could play it fairly in a Timmy deck, because more often than not, you'll just draw more than you'll discard.
Yeah. No, that is true. Or big commander decks. Like, I think of, like, Galta Primal Hunger, the one that gets cheaper based on the power you have on the battlefield.
100%.
So you can sack that, draw a ton of cards, and then just cast it again at a discount from the command zone. And Yeah.
Or any Golgari deck is going to love this card. So.
Yep.
But it's always, you got to play it unfairly. Discard 3 is not nothing. I very rarely play it because I'm looking at it fairly most of the time, and then it's like, yeah. I do always play Disciple of Fraelise, and it's probably the most tutored creature I have ever tutored for, and I actually tutor a lot for creatures in recent years. It's just so good. You can just tutor for a creature, but instead get a land, and that is mostly what I'm looking for. And then sometimes you sacrifice something with it, but I mostly play it as a land.
I can't believe that. You would, you tutor that much, Phil? Oh my God, gross.
I mean, Disciple of Fraelise.
Constructed and stuff, okay.
Disciple of Fraelise is so good, though. Like, you really should play that in basically any green deck, I think. Like, it's very hard for me to not play that card, because opportunity cost is so low, right? Because, you know, we just play an untapped land if you need to on the backside, but. So, what about, our next group is a little bit different. So now, these have been kind of burst card draw spells, but there's also a lot of green cards that draw you one card repeatedly if you meet their condition. So these are card draw spells that draw based on a creature's power, usually from that creature entering. So like Vaultborn Tyrant, for example, is a big old dinosaur. It's a 7-mana 6/6. When it or another creature with power 4 or greater enters, you get to draw a card and you get to gain 3 life. Or Fecund Green Shell, when a creature with toughness higher than its power enters, you get to draw a card, and if it's a land, you get to put it into play tap, like a Risen Reef. Outcaster Trailblazer, when a creature with power 4 or greater enters, you get to draw. Savala Heart of the Wilds is also like that. If you have the highest power creature, it draws you a card. Tribute to the World Tree, when a creature enters, you get to draw. These go in a very different style of deck, right? Like, compared to the burst card draw effects, where you're really rewarded for having at least some or maybe a few big creatures on the battlefield, and you get to refill your hand all at once. These reward you more for repeatedly being able to play creatures, and they do that kind of snowball-y value generation thing. What kind of deck do you play these cards in, guys?
Vaultborn Tyrant in way too many decks. As soon as I find
that is a very
couple of
card.
Creatures that have 4 powers, like, yep. Luckily, I opened one in the pre-release, which was, I mean, this one's a limited atom bomb, but this one and Tribute to the World Tree are the ones that I play in pretty much every green creature-based deck.
It depends on how much triple green is a factor in some of my decks. I could play it in, obviously, mono green. I think you're jamming Tribute to the World Tree. That card is phenomenal. God, that set was also just so good for Commander. And then outside of that, Vaultborn Tyrant, kind of just awesome. A dinosaur. I opened one of the fancy foil gold border one that I really love, which I found out is actually worth a lot. I just like playing with those two. Those are, like, I would say generically, these are good cards. I know Vaultborn Tyrant has the OSB4 or greater. Yeah. That's every green card, okay? Like that's every green creature. Don't act like it isn't. And so the other ones, though, like Outcast Trailblazer, I like the plot. The plot means that you can set up for a big turn, right? A big turn, like the combo decks in Standard, the teamer ones, you could definitely do that. So those three are solid. But Silvala, unless I'm playing Group Hug, and I'm talking Group Hug with big bodies, I don't really like Silvala all that much. Right, because, like, it triggers for whoever has the biggest power.
Yeah, but...
I mean, most likely it's that could
the,
be
the,
you, but...
the rampart is the crazy thing about Savala, I think. Like, I recently got to play with it again, or play it against it because of Voja. It is... I don't care if the opponent draws a card if I untap with 7 mana and then draw hella cards.
But Phil, is that a draw spell that you love or a ramp spell that you love?
It's a
right?
spell.
By the optics of this podcast, I think it is not a good draw spell.
I would mostly agree with that. And if we're going to do the ramp slash card draw spell, I guess we just mentioned Summon Fenrir real quick right now, because that's another one that I never would put in my deck as a card draw spell. I'd never have been like, ooh, I need some card draw. Let's play Summon Fenrir. But it also ramps you. And then eventually, when you hit the third lore counter, it draws you a card if you have the creature with the greatest power or tried for the greatest power. So very good card as a ramp spell, kind of like Savala. But then you also get the upside that you often get to draw a card with it.
But only one card?
Only one.
Yeah, that's just cycling. I don't even know if that's a draw spell by definition.
I wouldn't say it as a draw spell, but...
It is modal. It is almost like a modal spell that's like a one-off, right? Because then you get the 1/1 counter on the second chapter. I know that may not seem relevant, but it is sweet. And then at the last mode, that's when you draw, right? If you have the highest power. I do like Summon Fenrir, though. I think Summon Fenrir is a sweet card.
It's
very good role player. Kind of like if I were to say get your veggies, I would throw this in with my veggies. And it's a veggie that does a little bit of everything. So it doesn't excel in any one department, but I do really like this card.
I guess as we're talking about these cards that draw you cards based on creatures entering based on a condition, I guess we should also say there's a bunch of green card draw spells that do something similar. But they don't have the restriction of needing, like, a certain amount of power or higher toughness. So this is going to be stuff like the Great Henge, for example. Just whenever a creature enters, you put a counter on it, you draw a card. Beast Whisper, whenever you cast a creature spell, the 4-drop is going to draw you a card. Guardian Project is essentially the same thing in Commander, since it's a singleton format. Whenever you play a creature, you're going to draw a card, unless you're, like, the Relentless Rats deck or something. Then it might not work for you. Zendikar Resurgent also does the same thing. Champions of the Perfect, the newest edition from Lorwyn Eclipse. You got a champion and elf, but then when you cast a creature, you draw a card. How do you weigh this group of cards compared to the last group of cards we're talking about, like the Outcaster Trailblazers and Vaultborn Tyrants? Is it better just to play the generic ones that just are going to draw whenever you play a creature, or does it depend on the deck? What do you think of these cards?
So I like Vaultborn Tyrant of them. Just because it's sort of sweeper resilient because it leaves the token behind. So that one's nice. But all of these being on a creature, more often than not to me, is an upside. It does open itself up to sweepers, but I like that my card advantage is also a body. Because until somebody board wipes, though, you control the board. You're going to get... Everybody wants to politic with you, right? Because no one wants to get smacked by a 7-7. So... I like these a little bit more than the generic ones because they are a clock. They are a clock.
And I would say... go ahead, Phil.
Wait, didn't we just talk about Great Henge?
That's probably the best green card.
I mean, it's still kind of a clock because of the plus one counter. So a little bit of a clock.
Sure. But Vaultborn Tyrant is a clock. Mistake.
Yeah. Vaultborn Tyrant is cooler, but Great Henge is... I think
the best green card in
Commander, and probably in the top 10 best cards in Casual Commander. Maybe top 5. Maybe top 3, actually. It's just wrong.
Great Henge is a absolutely silly card. It is very, very good, for sure. I do think there's a little difference between something like it and Vaultborn Tyrant in terms of what decks you'd put it in. Because Great Henge is going to work really well with, like, an Elf Ball style deck, right? Where you have just all these small creatures that you can spell. Same with Beast Whisper, Champions of the Perfect. They work really well with a whole bunch of small creatures that you can chain together and just draw. When something like Vaultborn Tyrant really wants
to have something big
creatures,
then,
right?
Yeah, I guess
you need a big creature to get it on the battlefield. But then I think you're going to get more value out of chaining together 1-drops than trying to play 6 or 7 drops. Yeah. When Vaultborn Tyrant, you're really going to want to be playing, to even draw with it at all, you want to be playing pretty big creatures to be able to have high enough power to trigger its draw mode.
But it's cool.
It is cool. It is cool. And it is nice that it has the resilient body on it. Where are you guys at with Guardian Project? I feel like this is a card that a few years ago I saw everywhere, and now I don't see it as much in people's decks. Has this card gotten power crept?
This card was like the draw spell for green. It's still good. I don't know why it fell off. It's been reprinted into the ground, but like...
It's still 12 bucks though. Just checked.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I guess the price is up.
Still 12. I mean, it's still awesome. It's still a very strong card. So that's a good question. Why has that? I didn't even know that had fallen off, but that's once you pointed that out, I don't see as many people playing it anymore. Yeah. And I'm curious as to why.
I feel they like
they reprinted it at Rare. That is at Mythic. That is so predatory.
Not going to help with the price. Wow. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I feel like Zendikar Resurgent also fell off a lot. That one even fell off for me.
That one
because when they first printed that one, I played it a lot. But that was like a decade ago when it came out. And they've just printed more card draw options, more mana doubling options. So a 7-mana enchantment that like doubles your mana and draws a card is just not as exciting to me as it was like in 2018 or whenever it was that it came out.
Also, it's 7 mana, and you could still do more for like less, right?
Yeah. 7 mana is just a ton.
Although if you untap with it, it's still got to be crazy. I know there's a lot of cards that do this.
Oh,
but
it's still crazy. Yeah.
Double mana.
It's still good if you untap with it, but
it's a 7 mana do nothing.
Do you think those cards have gotten worse just because Commander's gotten faster, like over the last decade? I feel like that's got to hurt a little bit, right? Like if your games are going 12 turns instead of 9 turns, like Zendikar Resurgent's going to give you more value.
And they staple removal on random stuff. Like sometimes they just play jumping changeling because they wanted an elf and a wolf, and then it's gone.
And then it's gone. Yeah.
And it did nothing, right? Because it just comes down, and it's like, all right, cool. And then if you're waiting to deploy it on like turn 11 or something like that, then it's really an 11 drop, and then it just feels worse.
Speaking of creature-based card draw, there's another group that I think of as kind of the green Phyrexian arenas. These are enchantments that typically draw you one card each turn, but you gotta do a little green thing to get the card. So the classic example of this is Garruk's Uprising. 3-mana enchantment. When it enters, if you control a creature power 4 or greater, you draw a card, your creatures have trample, and then whenever a creature you control with power 4 or greater enters, you get to draw a card. Actually, that one's not as Phyrexian Arena.
Yeah, this one's...
That one's more rewarding you for drawing a bunch of cards. I was thinking more of the like thickest in the thicket and high score effects that like draw you one card on your end step as long as you meet the criteria. What do you think about these enchantments though? In this group, we have Garruk's Uprising, Elemental Bond, and then Thickest in the Thicket in High Score is a new one from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Do you play any of these cards?
You know, if your end step. Wait. High Score is an actual arena, though.
High Score is a 3-mana enchantment that says, if one or more +1/+1 counters would be put on a creature you control, put that many +1 on it instead. So hardened scales.
They put this on any card.
And then your end step, draw a card if you control a creature with the greatest power among creatures on the battlefield. So as long as you have the greatest power creature, it's essentially a Phyrexian arena and a hardened scales. But if you got no creatures, it does literally nothing.
I mean, I like Garruk's Uprising, right?
The trample is relevant.
But anything that gives me something that I naturally already want with a stapled on draw effect, I like, right? Because if I already wanted to do that and you attach value to it, I love that. So High Score example, like you had mentioned in it, from Turtle Set, it does only draw you, it only draws you a card, right?
One card if also, you have the highest power, yeah.
But it also gives you those counters. And so it is a 2-in-1, so it's a little bit of an in-between, kind of like why I love Summon Fenrir. It's a little bit of two things. It doesn't excel in any one or the other, but the fact that it's together, it's nice. And I really like High Score as well. I don't play it enough because I don't know where it is in my house.
It's literally missing in the house somewhere. And I think it is somewhere. That's also the kind of card that I would be, think of more as a card for specific green decks, right? Like, Thickest in the Thicket, I probably want to have some sort of counter synergies going on, like, for me to play this deck. When something like Return to the Wild Speaker, I'll play in almost any deck. That's more like, okay, if I'm the right kind of green deck, I'll play that. What about Thickest in the Thicket? I remember, I think Tomer playing this on a Clash, and I remember us being very impressed with it on that Clash. But when I read the card, I'm kind of like, I don't know. It's a 5-mana enchantment.
It's a little one more.
A lot of mana.
When it enters, you put X +1/+1 counters on target creature, where X is its power. So essentially doubling the power and toughness of a creature. And then beginning your end step, you draw 2 cards if you control the creature with the greatest power or tied for the greatest power. Is that one worth it? 5-mana kind of scares me.
That's like 1.5 copies of High Score, right?
Yeah.
Like for the basically price. I don't like it. At five, that's a bit much. I'd rather just play one of the 3-cost ones, like whether it's Garrix or High Score, any of those. I'd play any of the things that are cheaper, because that is where you're in the curve of, okay, this is a setup piece. I like that. I'm okay with paying 3 mana for a setup piece. Now we start looking at a little bit more like kin bonding or whatever from Lorwyn Eclipse, where this generates me lots of value and will kill, and like I don't have to do much more.
Yeah.
You really got to want the counters there. I mean, funnily enough, if you have Terra Symbiosis or something that draws
equal
to the amount number of counters or something with, was it Mutate? The thing where when a counter gets put on something, the counters are the important part. Like, it's kind of cool that you draw 2 cards, but for 5 mana, you really gotta need those counters. Name is funny, though. Gotta say, there is some extra value in being the thickest in the thicket.
That's so, with a lot of C's.
So those,
oh,
those are...
No pain, no fame is the flavor text. It's just getting better. Sadly, the rules text isn't too good.
So those are cards that we'd probably only play in a counters deck. If, let's say, you are playing a green deck with +1/+1 counters, what options are you using for card draw? Because the other ones I see that you could really use, you mentioned Terra Symbiosis. I think that might be the new best one now, where once per turn, 3-mana enchantment, once
that
per turn, whenever you put one or more counters on things, you draw equal to the number of counters you put on it. So if you put a bunch of counters on it with like a Thickest in the Thicket, you can draw a whole bunch of cards. But there's also Inspiring Call is like, 3-mana instant that draws a card for each creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it, and those creatures get indestructible until end of turn. Armorcraft Judge is like a 4-mana creature version of that that draws you a card for each thing that has a +1/+1 counter on it, no indestructibility. And then Generous Patron, I think this is for decks that put counters on your opponent's things more than your things, but a 3-mana 1/4. When it enters, you support 2, and when you put 1 or more +1/+1 counters on a creature you don't control, you draw a card. So what are you doing with these cards? Which of these are you playing if you're playing a +1/+1 counter green deck in Commander?
I mean, Terra Symbiosis is
that's
like
the number one, right? It's got to be the number one.
That's been the best thing.
Yes. But there are differences. Like, if you... Maybe I was thinking, because there are a lot of commanders that get a bunch of counters, and then a lot of commanders that gain incremental counters. Like, if you play Trelasara, you'll get 1 counter at a time whenever you gain life, but then again, you probably gain life every turn because of Soul Sisters, so it's still very, very good. And then there's stuff like Voja that gains a bunch of counters at once, and then it's also very good. So maybe it's just the best one. It doesn't help itself. Like, Thickest in the Thicket.
Sure.
Just enables itself.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Need other things and ways to put counters on those things to make Terra Symbiosis work. But it's just so bursty compared to the other +1/+1 counter draw, where a lot of the +1/+1 counter draw, if you're doing like High Score or Thickest of the Thicket, you're kind of like drawing a card, maybe drawing 2 cards. Terra Symbiosis, when it pops off, it feels so good, because you just draw so many cards when it comes together.
Like an Ouroboroid plus Terra Symbiosis is one of the greatest feelings you can have.
Yeah.
And I hate that card, but it still feels great.
Yes.
What about Generous Patron? Like, I've never played this card. I don't know if I've ever played against
it's
this card.
Spiked,
is there
right?
any reason why we're talking
what
about
is this
card?
I need to look this up. Hold on.
Yeah.
This
I just know that
it's
a spike
card that wants you to put counters on your opponent's creatures. And when you put a counter on your opponent's creatures, you get to draw cards. I just don't know, like, what commander decks are about putting counters on your opponent's stuff? That's a pretty... I bet this is a card
Defense Contractor. Something, something defense.
Oh, this spiked with Lorwyn Eclipse, right? Because it works with any counters, not just +1/+1 counters.
Right, -1, -1.
So it works with like all the blight stuff, and people started playing it with blight. I see.
Oh yeah. Oh, with blight is actually kind of cool. Like the cross decks play it because you put shield counters on the opponent's creatures and then politic your way into value. If you put -1/-1 counters, that's probably the best card in the deck then. But that's something completely different than the decks that play Temporary Terra Symbiosis.
Yes. Yeah, no, you would probably not play them in the same deck. Like, it's more, very, very niche. But in the decks where it's good, it seems like it's probably very strong. Okay, so now we have a couple of cards that draw cards, but want you to have a lot of creatures. So these are still burst card draw effects, but rather than wanting one really big creature, they want to have a bunch of creatures on the battlefield. Not as many of these, but we have Become the Avalanche, which I believe is a pretty new one from Avatar. Become the Avalanche is... Wait, where's Become the Avalanche?
It's from Takia.
Oh, it's from Tarkir. I thought it was... Six drop sorcery from Tarkir. It is a 6-mana sorcery. It says draw a card for each creature you control with power 4 or greater. Then creatures you control get +X/+X until end of turn, where X is the number of cards in your hand. And also Shamanic Revelation is draw a card for each creature you control for 5-mana sorcery speed. And then if you have Ferocious, you draw you gain 4 life for each creature you control with power 4 or greater. So where do these cards fit? Got to be like go wide style green decks, go wide with big thing style green decks in the case of Become the Avalanche.
Let me look this up.
I almost never play them. It seems so win more.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice.
How many cards do you want to draw with this?
This card seems really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so much easier to get one big creature or like big in the, so let's say you want to draw 5 cards or something, that is like where you want to be with these or where you want to start with these. Maybe 4. If you have 4 creatures, you got a pretty good board. But if you have a 4-mana 4/4, that's easy.
I especially think that Become the Avalanche is like very niche and hard to use, because the way I see Shamanic Revelation be played is like an Elf Ball style decks or token decks, right? Where you just go super wise, super quick with like 1/1s. And then I think it's good if you're playing like Lathril or Chatterfang or something like that. Then I think it's a very powerful like burst card draw effect, because those decks are built to just spew these cheap creatures on the battlefield. But with Become the Avalanche, you got that extra restriction that it only works with creatures power 4 or greater. It is a lot harder to spew a bunch of 4+ power creatures on the battlefield than it is to just spew a bunch of 1/1 tokens.
I mean, yeah, like Phil has a good point though, in that like also if I have a bunch of 4 power creatures, I'm probably winning anyways, right?
So hopefully.
But I guess like if there is a format for Become the Avalanche, it's Commander, because that's where win mores are often celebrated.
I bet they play it in Bellow or something. There's gotta be like certain decks where it's like, oh, I have all these 4 power creatures and it's actually good in my deck. And the pump is probably scary, right? If you draw like 5 or 6 cards and everything gets +10/+10 until end of turn, you probably do just end up killing someone. No trample though, right? Like it's pump without the trample, which is kind of annoying, but.
Oh yeah, I just automatically in my mind assumed that there would be trample.
No,
but
you don't get to trample,
There's no trample? Okay, hold on, this card may just be unplayable. This card is bad.
We've never seen it for a reason.
okay, hold on, that card is terrible.
So, if you guys are going wide with little creatures, maybe rather than Shamanic Revelation or Become the Avalanche, are you believers in stuff like Toski, Bearer of Secrets, or Orin Frostfang, these creatures that just reward you for damaging your opponent? I think Toski is probably the classic example of this. Is a 4-drop indestructible 1/1 that can't be countered and has to attack each turn, whatever. But whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you get to draw a card. So if you hit your opponents with 10 creatures, you draw 10 cards. Or in Frostfang, the same thing, but on a 5-mana 2/6, and it gives your attacking creatures death touch. I feel like in go wide decks, these are some of the best card draw effects that you can play.
Orin Frostfang is regularly in my stats episode as one of the most green creatures. I prefer it over Toski, because in the go wide decks, I kind of want my pests or whatever to not just get chump blocked. So death touch helps, and the 1 more mana, sure, it's not indestructible. It's so cool, though. Also, there's this very cool version. Like this, where was it printed? Ah, Commander. What is this? Commander Legends or something? Commander Masters.
Mm.
I snacked it when it was cheap, and now I have it, and I play it a bunch.
I mean, when I think of Toski, I think of Richard. Richard, that's like the Richard classic with his bird deck, where you just spew the one ones, and you draw all the cards with it. You play Toski, right, Graham? I've seen you play Toski before, I think.
You mean Sandy Cheeks?
Yeah, Sandy Cheeks.
I know Sandy Cheeks, from SpongeBob. I genuinely like Toski. I think that one's great, but Oren Frostfang is the card, right? This card used to be so expensive.
It creeped up again, sadly.
Is it? Wait, still, what is it now?
It's about it used to be 10, like, 11 bucks.
Is it still?
Oh, man, I got like one of those foil for like $2.
I feel like they put it in pre-con too, like not that long ago. But
Everything spiked just had it
recently. Like almost every card spiked recently. If you check your commander decks, they're probably more expensive than they were 3 months ago. Just
the
sad truth.
The one thing I'm curious about is, do you play Herd Heirloom? Because this is a card that is very interesting to me. I like it. It reads nice, right? And they're trying to make it so green plays mana rocks, which is very hard to justify. Really got to give me a reason to play a green mana rock. This card is moving. I don't play this card. I think this card is really bad, but I think it is moving in a direction. It's just, it brings an interesting design to the game. In that, like, now you're rewarding me for playing a mana rock, and I kind of like it. What would make Herd Heirloom playable and where you'd want to, like, throw it in your deck?
Let's read it first, because I think it was hyped in the beginning.
Yeah.
Then. So it's a 2-mana artifact, enters untapped. It taps for a mana of any color, but only for creature spells, and then you can tap it until end of turn. Target creature you control with power 4 or greater gains trample, and when this creature deals combat damage to a player, draw a card. I don't know. It's close, right? It's if you power creep it a bit on any like variable, it gets very good. Like, you can't cut mana. It's very good.
If you just got rid of the restriction of only making mana for creatures, that would probably be enough for me to be more excited about it.
I think if you get, I mean, that would make it an instant staple, I think, right? But I think if you get rid of the power 4 or greater, like if you can give you a random 1/1 flyer the effect, then I like it.
Because that would probably be enough too, I mean,
because if they make it a green, I don't know, what's the emerald or something? The runes that tap for just one color. I guess they're going to power creep it with when the Thanos thing in green comes out.
We
it's going to be indestructible
and stone or
something,
whatever,
something broken. Yeah. So,
sure.
I wonder, it'll be very interesting to see when there's a green infinity stone if it sees play, because the biggest issue is like green just doesn't need mana rock. So it's actually got to be very good for me to want to put a mana rock in my deck over like a Nature's Lore or something, because it's just like not synergistic with most green decks to play an artifact. Like, a green's good at blowing up artifacts. They want lands entering, not artifacts entering. I think Herd Heirloom is not embarrassing, though. Like, even in its current state, if you're playing a bunch of big creatures, it's fine. Like, I usually don't play it, but if you do, I'm not going to, you know, laugh at you or something. Like, I would still be like, okay, that's like a reasonable card.
It costs
your commander. Everything that you've just said, I would still not play.
Yeah. Really? How many upgrades do you need, Grim? Like, what would I have to say for you to play it?
I think you're moving in the direction where it needs to be, like, indestructible for starters, because I'm playing Bane of Progress. Right, like you were talking about, like if there whatever the Infinity Stone is in green, that it would have to be indestructible, and because that's what the Soul Stone is. Then we could start talking, because I'm playing Bane of Progress in my green decks. I'm doing all these things that are mass blowing up artifacts and enchantments. That's a start. Then I would remove the restriction, but. See, I would probably go and make it so that it like gives trample and draws just it would need to draw me two cards. If it read like this, I think it'd have to draw me two cards.
The other thing I could somehow do with it is make it so you can draw cards and make mana in the same turn. I don't know exactly what that would be, but if you just like made a green mana when you went to your pre-combat main phase or something, and then you could still tap it to draw cards, Because that's all their downside, right? Is you have to choose, do I want the mana or do I want the card? So you got to make that choice each turn. If you could do both each turn, that would also make it even better.
That'd be too good, right?
That, like, might, then that, it's that like, might
okay,
be too
much. That might be too nuts.
It's also in standard, which
might
get complicated if it's too good.
We also have a couple other draw equal to damage cards, and I think these cards are very bad and don't play them, but I want to see if maybe I'm missing something. So Hunter's Insight, 3-mana instant, you choose a creature you control. When it deals combat damage to a player, you draw that many cards. And then there's a 5-mana version in Hunter's Prowess, which is 5-mana sorcery. Until end of turn, a creature gets +3/+3, gains trample, and when it deals combat damage to a player, you draw that many cards. When I read these cards, this is where I see the risk, right? These definitely do target, unlike the burst draw we were talking about earlier with, like, Return of the Wild Speaker.
Yes.
So if your opponent kills the creature in response, you get nothing. But it's even worse than that because you actually have to deal combat damage with the creature. So if your opponent's all blockers, it still does nothing. So I just don't see the appeal to this over, like, your Return to the Wild Speaker or Rishkar's Expertise style effect. Are there any decks where these cards are actually worth it, in your opinion?
In reality, no. Like unless it, maybe you find art or some flavorful reasons to play these.
There's always, like, flavor reasons.
Sure, right? Those decks, maybe. But, like, I see no reason to ever run this. There's no upside.
Yeah, I've seen Toma play them, and when you see them played, they're good, but that's because they're incredibly situational.
Yeah.
So I don't play them.
I feel the, like, 40 cards that somebody would draw from this is probably to make up for the fact that for the last 39 turns, it's been in their hand.
Yes, right? Yes, like, so, exactly.
So I don't think it's ever worth it.
I think Tomer might play him for budget reasons. That's my guess.
Budget,
is that they're like budget card draw effects that he uses sometimes in place of, like, some of the more expensive ones. But I mean, at least Hunter's Insight, I guess, is an instant where you can, like, wait until
that
something's
nice.
Unblocked and cast it. But still, an instant speed removal spell still blows you out and you get nothing out of it. So, all right, let's move on to some more kind of narrow card draw here. These are card draw effects that really only work in specific decks. Easy example here, enchantment card draw. Green has a bunch of Enchantresses, Eidolon of Blossoms. 4-mana, 2/2, it's an enchantment creature. When it or another enchantment enters, you draw a card. Enchantress's Presence, 3-mana enchantment. Whenever you cast an enchantment spell, you draw a card. Setessan Champion, a 3-mana 1/3, that whenever you cast an enchantment, or whenever enchantment enters, rather, it draws a card because it has Constellation. There's also Vidurian Enchantress, Argothian Enchantress, draws cards when you play an enchantment. These are just, like, great if you're Enchantress, horrible everywhere else, pretty much.
Yeah. I don't think that green is ever generically playing a silly amount of enchantments to get the true value from this. And even then, if you did, for some weird reason, you would never get as much value as you would get from playing any of the other draw things that we've mentioned, right? So I would not, no.
So Phil, if you are playing Enchantress, like Seth is or something, do you just run all of these? Or are there so many you have to prioritize and choose the best ones?
Depends if it's Clash or if I have to actually pay for the cards, because a Gothian Enchantress is $70. I just checked if it's on the reserve list.
Oh,
no,
it's not,
because
it was in a Master set. It was in
Eternal
Masters. I remember it. Yeah.
But that Eternal Masters was like maybe like,
I guess that's a long time
ago.
I was still back in uni back then. I would probably play all of them. Then again, I would probably play Sithis as a commander, so I have the best one in the command zone already.
Dirty Sithis. I will say, if you do have to rank them, Argothian's really good because it has Shroud, so it can't be targeted. Unless you're playing an Auras deck, then it gets a little worse because you also cannot target it because it has Shroud. Enchantress's Presence is a strong one. I think Vernurian Enchantress is like the worst one, just like there's no special bells or whistles. It's just a 3-mana, 0/2 that when you cast an enchantment, you draw a card. It's still fine, but I think that's the weakest of the enchantment card draw. And then Eidolon of Blossoms is nice because it triggers itself. So even if it dies, at least it cycled when it entered. All right, next up, we have cards that draw equal to death. Phil, we got a random kind of assortment of cards here that work in different ways. Do any of these stick out to you as being the most interesting or the ones that you play on this list?
Wait, cards? Death?
Death draw.
Oh, there.
Yeah.
Maelstrom. I don't know this one. Fecundity. I know this because of a combo deck way back then. And then Gotham. Yeah, okay. I got to read some of these cards, actually.
Yeah, we're getting to the deep cuts.
Oh my God, these are deep cuts, yeah. So it's, that's an uncommon from DOE. Whenever a creature you control with a counter on it dies, draws a card. Yeah, so death triggers are like, you got to build around them. It's very easy to have creatures enter. It's not that easy to have them die when you want them to without building around it, because at some point the opponent will just take the damage instead of blocking them. So all of them, I haven't...
The one
that's so Fecundity is a 3-mana enchantment that whenever a creature dies, that creature's controller may draw a card. You can mill them out, but because it's a May, but everybody can draw, so be careful. But wasn't there like a Fecundity Goblin deck or something way back in the day?
Yeah, where you could make goblins with like Empty the Warrens and you sacrifice them to like Goblin Bob Barn would keep drawing and you kind of storm off with it. So yeah, there have been uses to that card. The risk of Fecundity in Commander, though, is it works for everybody, right? So it's a little group huggy. So if your opponent's creatures die, they also get to draw cards, which makes it a little hard, I think, for me to put in most decks, because I'm always like, oh, someone's like, Crim's going to cast a Wrath, and everyone's going to refill their hand. I don't know if I want to. So I really got to be comboing with it. The rest of the cards in this group, I actually think that Crim is just not very good at these. Yeah, what is the Hydra, Crim? Lifeblood Hydra. Is this one worth playing?
I like Lifeblood Hydra. It's triple green X, 0/0 trample, and it enters the battlefield with X-1/1 counters on it. When it dies, you gain life and draw cards equal to its power. It doesn't read fancy or anything like that, but like I promise you, and when you play this card is super nice, especially if you're like a Zamone deck or something like that from the Strixhaven. Oh, yeah. But if you can make a lot of mana, just getting this down on the board, it'll be a big body. For 6 mana, it is a 3/3, but in reality, I imagine most green decks can really take advantage of the X cost, and then it would heal you and draw all those cards back. So I kind of like that. Now, of course, if they exile it, it feels really bad. This is like Path Target 101. Like, this is the first thing that's getting like swords. But hey, that's like they helped you do half of the card anyways. You gain the life. So... Although the important part is the card draw. I like this card a lot. And it plays nice in any sack deck, Golgari deck, where you can really just, you know, get rid of it at a whim, right? Like whether you can just send it to the bin in some way, shape, or form. I like that.
Yeah. Hydras, X-Spell decks. I think it's reasonable there, especially if you have a sacrifice outlet. The rest of the cards in the death group, I feel, are like pretty tame. I feel like black is better at this than green is, but like, Bequeathal is like a 1-mana aura. The enchanted creature, when the creature dies, you draw 2 cards. Not really in that business unless you somehow build Aristocrat Boggles, which I don't think I've ever seen before. But if you pull it off, this sounds kind of interesting. What about like, so we mentioned Maelstrider Eulogist and Tributary Instructor. These are creatures that whenever a creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on them dies, you draw a card. If you're playing a counters deck, do you play these? Like, are these even worth playing in a +1/+1 counter deck? Or do you stick with the Terra Symbiosis, Armorcraft Judge, Inspiring Call stuff we talked about earlier? Because I don't think I've ever seen these cards on the battlefield, honestly.
Nope.
I guess I just don't know why, right? Like at some point, right, you're just loaded with card draw that doesn't necessarily, you know, always trigger. So I'd rather get something else like Terra Symbiosis and things along those lines that reward me for putting the counter on as opposed to reward me for losing stuff with a counter on it. So, I don't really like any of these. I would not play them personally.
Really? You got to jump through some hoops, right? Because you need to be like a counters deck that also has a lot of creatures in it. And then like even then they seem
and
kind
you
of
gotta
not
lose
great.
The creature.
Yeah. You got to lose, which is not what you want to do with your creatures, right? You want your creatures to live ideally. Grothama is a cool card, but Grothama, I just view as a commander. Like, it's a funny, like, meme commander to build around, but I don't think I'd ever play it in a normal deck. It's a 5-mana 10/8 that says, other creatures have, when this creature attacks, you may have it fight Grothama All-Devouring, and then when it leaves the battlefield, each player draws cards equal to the amount of damage that they dealt to it by their sources this turn. So, one of the weirdest cards that they've made. I don't see any reason to put this in a deck, though, right? You wouldn't just jam this like a Harmonize in a green deck and expect to get value out of it, I don't think.
No.
No. Probably. If you can profit from it, if you attack with Galta and fight this,
Oh, that is kind of cool.
On you, but the greater good thing seems a little more efficient there.
Yeah. Greater good's just better. Greater good's just better. I don't need more things to make greater good better.
All right. For our last group of green card draw, we have some, like, I guess somewhat generic card draw. This is stuff like Harmonize, for example. Four mana draw, three in green. Sylvan Library, which you probably already know, a two-mana enchantment, beginning of your draw step, you draw two extra cards, and you got to put two back or pay four life to keep them. A Compost? Compost is a two-mana enchantment that says when a black card goes to the graveyard, you get to draw to your opponent's graveyard, you get to draw a card. And then there's also a couple of artifact-based ones. Viridian Revel, three-mana enchantment, when an artifact goes in your opponent's graveyard, you draw a card. In the newest version, Party Dude, is a class enchantment from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles set. One mana, when it enters, everyone makes a food. And then if you level it up for two mana, then it works like Viridian Revel, where when an artifact goes to your opponent's graveyard, you get to draw a card. And if you get to level three, it pumps your creatures a little bit when you attack. Do you play any of these cards? Like, when I think of generic green card draw, my mind goes to Return to the Wild Speaker Rishkar's expertise. But I do also play Harmonize and Sylvan Library in some of my decks. I haven't really played with Compost and Viridian Revel much. Like, for me, I'm a little worried that they won't be consistent enough. Like, what if you're not playing artifacts? What if you're not playing black cards? But then occasionally I see you guys play them and they pop off super hard and I get jealous. So what do you think of this group?
Sylvan Library is not like the rest, is my comment on this.
A lot of these are very, very specific cards, right? Like, Compost is kind of whack outside of the one time where you bet a game correctly,
black decks,
right?
On the table.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, so ridiculous.
You got them, right? But but Sylvan Library, I could see me playing. Harmonize. See, that's one of those cards where I get it. It's just a raw draw three. No requirements needed. But I would rather do the slightly more restrictive one and just draw way more than three cards, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Harmonize, I used to be much more excited about. I still play it sometimes because I have a cool borderless copy of it and I like Harmonize. But I feel like it's fine, but I also feel like it's probably not optimal anymore. I feel like we've gotten so much more green card draw that you probably honestly don't really need it. I am intrigued by Party Dude, just like giving everyone a food. And then if I was a deck that was actually built around blowing up artifacts, then it seems like it'd be very strong. But I feel like if I'm not specifically built around trying to, like, somehow, whatever, liquid metal coating, give you artifacts and blow them up or something, I would just be too scared to put it in my deck that, like, maybe no one's an artifact deck and I just played this card for no reason, essentially. Well, our last cards, these were miscellaneous question mark. We have three cards in this group. Riki, History of Kamigawa, 3/1/2. Whenever you play a legendary spell, you draw a card. Up the Beanstalk, you probably know, one of the most absurd cards that they printed in recent years. Two-mana enchantment. When it enters, you draw a card. When you cast something, mana value 5 or greater, you draw a card. And then Season of Growth, 2-mana enchantment. Whenever you cast something that targets one of your creatures, you get to draw a card. Or when a creature enters, you describe one, and then when you target one of your creatures with a spell, you get to draw a card. These for me are just like very
Naya
niche,
Feather,
right?
Love this.
Yes, Naya Feather, that was so good. Riki, if you're a Legends deck, it's great, right? If you're Joda or something, I'd play Riki in like a Joda deck and just like draw cards off of it. But if I'm not doing that, I don't care. Up the Beanstalk, I actually think you can play in a lot of decks because it cycles when it enters. So like, you can jam that in a lot of decks, and most green decks, you're going to trigger it eventually. It's at its best if you build around it, but I don't think you really have to build around Up the Beanstalk that much.
Yeah, Up the Beanstalk is definitely the most generic one of these, just because you don't build a commander deck, or you don't win with a commander deck unless you're playing Feather or something that plays only up to three. I recently put it in a commander deck for an upcoming Clash episode, and I feel like if I draw it, we're going to say, oh my god, busted. Somebody banned this card in 60-card format. Yeah. And you don't even need to break it, just like we do in Modern, or did. Just play your 5-drop, and then here you go.
So I think that's all of our card draw. We went through almost 60 green card draw spells. But before we wrap it up today, I want to know, just what do you guys pick as, like, overall, the, I don't know, your top three, top five green card draw spells, like, what are the ones that you play the most? Like, if someone's watching this and they're like, I want to build a commander collection, I'm going to go out and buy a few of these cards, what direction do you point them in? Like, so probably more generic ones. Like, obviously, if you want to build Enchantress, get the Enchantress stuff, or Counters, get the Counters stuff. But if you're just building a generic collection, where do you go? Where do you start with these cards? Let's start with you, Phil. What would your picks be for just, like, get these first, essentially?
Great Henge, Season of Gathering.
Bougie.
And, yeah, and Orin Frostfang, I think.
Those are
I don't think I could recommend Great Henge because of price. That yeah. thing is get so the blood so much. Good.
It's
like 80 to 90 bucks or something, right? But you
yeah,
know what?
60 plus.
I could recommend a fraction of that. I would still recommend Guardian Project. I think Guardian Project's still really good. Yeah, it doesn't make the mana and gain the life, but if the purpose is to draw cards, it's a very solid draw engine. Cheaper than where it was. I still love Orin Frostfang. That's just a heater. And then, I don't know, I still would also play the heck out of a Return the Wild Speaker, right? This is a card that is an overrun. I love a good game closer, and when I need to catch back up and just draw cards, it can be that as well. And again, it has my favorite thing on it, and it says instant. So I really like that.
Yeah, I would also say, for me, the burst card draw that draw equal to a creature's power are far and away the ones I play the most. So, like, I would go and get Return to the Wild Speaker, Lifestream's Blessing, and then really I get all of them because I think they all have uses. But then take your pick of, you know, Rishkar's Expertise, Rishkar. Season of Gathering, Legend of Kyoshi, Last March of the Ends, whatever you like, whatever fits your budget. But, like, those ones I think are essential. Disciple of Frailes as well goes in so many light green decks. So I think, and that's an uncommon that's not super expensive. So that's really worth having in your collection. But outside of the burst card draw, I guess I would say Sylvan Library is a card that I stopped playing as much for a while, but I've come back around on and I play it a lot now. And I'm always, if you draw that early in the game, it just feels so good. You feel like you have so much control over your library. So that's another one that I think you can generically play in almost any deck. You don't have to be like an enchantment deck to play it or anything. And I think it's going to be worth it. So that's another one that I think's worth picking up if you get a chance. Although that one's still a little bit pricey, even though they've reprinted it. It's still, I don't know, 20 bucks, 30 bucks or something like that. But if you got the budget for it, it is still a very solid card draw effect. But
oh, and if you're the triple green pips, I'd actually also like to throw in Tribute to the World Tree. If that is not a factor, that card is so good.
Yes, as long as you're like mostly mono green or close to mono green or have a very green heavy mana base, the card is absolutely great. Absolutely great. So, so good. Anyway, everyone, that is our green card draw podcast. So let us know what you think. What's your favorite green card draw spell? We talked about a lot of card draw. Do we miss any important green card draw spells? Let us know about that, too. And we'll be back next week to talk some more Commander. So until then, have a great week, everyone. And this is the crew signing out.